Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. You know, it's been 8 months since we first explored the story of a possible serial killer stalking victims on Interstate 80, in particular the stretch of asphalt that cuts across the vast emptiness of northern Nevada. And since the details about the disappearance of an elderly man named Patrick Carnes and his family's gut-wrenching quest for information about what happened to him, not a day goes by that without me getting at least one or two emails coming into my various online accounts seeking an update, more information about the case. As regular listeners know, we've updated the Carnes case a couple of times on the program, and I recently aired a television report about all the clues that came in, pouring in, I should say, thanks to Coast listeners in particular. The Carnes family extends its profound thanks to all of you for helping to keep the memory of Pat Carnes alive and to help law enforcement as it searches for what it still suspects could be a serial killer or killers. Tonight, the very latest in that investigation from the man who's headed it up since the beginning, Under Sheriff Curtis Cull of Humboldt County here in Nevada. He'll let us know what was done with all leads and tips that you sent in and what investigators need now. Under Sheriff Cull will be on the phone with us in just a couple of minutes. Then in hour two, and for the duration of tonight's program, something of a departure for us, we're going to talk to a fellow broadcaster, an award-winning radio guy, talk show host. He used to host a nationally syndicated program. It aired at the same time, at least in many markets, at the same time that this show airs. His name is Brian Holland, and he says that even when he was on the air with his own show, he kept an ear to coast to listen into what we were up to, what mysteries we were exploring. Brian's success as a broadcaster led him into politics, which is what a lot of broadcasters do, but not something as mundane as, say, a run for mayor or county commissioner or even congressman. He ran for president of the United States, using as his springboard his lofty position within a small political party which represents the interests of white supremacists, specifically National Socialists, better known as neo-Nazis. We would not normally provide a platform for neo-Nazis or white power advocates to spew a message which so many of us find repulsive, but this movement is not only alive and well, it's growing. Economic turmoil has brought more angry Americans into the fold. Anger at illegal immigrants, for example, unemployment issues, the unfairness of affirmative action programs, hot-button issues which strike a chord with millions of Americans who do not consider themselves to be Nazis or Aryans or anything like that. Brian rose quickly in this world of white supremacists. He was on a par with David Duke. He stood at Duke's side, in fact. But he had a secret agenda. And for 11 tension-filled years, he kept this secret. If it had become known, his life would have been in immediate danger. And I think after tonight's revelations to come, there could be consequences for him of a very serious nature. A look into the murky, secretive world of the white power movement by a man who was one of its leaders. That starts tonight in hour two. Should be quite an evening. A quick look, though, at the news of the hour from Kabul in Afghanistan. CNN is reporting a demonstrator died and several U.S. service members and Afghan police were injured as protests over the burning of Korans at a U.S. military base turned violent Sunday, said officials. The bloodshed came a day after a gunman killed two U.S. military officers, one of several incidents targeting allied forces, after reports emerged last week that NATO troops had burned Muslim holy books at Bagram Airfield. U.S. officials, including President Obama, have apologized for the burning and calling it inadvertent. A military official said that materials were from a detainee center's library and had inscriptions that appeared to be used to facilitate extremist communication. So these guys were using Korans to pass messages back and forth. A passenger train has derailed in the Canadian province of Ontario, killing at least three people and injuring dozens of others. The train traveling from Niagara Falls to Toronto crashed near Burlington. About 75 people are believed to have been on that train. 45 of those were injured. Not clear yet what caused the accident. CNN also reporting the website WikiLeaks has begun releasing what it says are 5 million emails from the private intelligence company Stratfor. The website promises a raft of juicy disclosures about Stratfor. It's a Texas-based firm that promotes itself to corporate and government clients as a source of intelligence on international affairs. This company employs a lot of former intelligence officials, and it shares confidential assessments of U.S. agencies, foreign governments, a lot of sensitive stuff. WikiLeaks is hinting that these releases could be a huge embarrassment for some of the agencies and officials involved. Well, if you watched the Oscars tonight, you know who won. If not, here are a couple of highlights. The Artist, a black and white silent film, won Best Picture. Its male star was Best Actor. Meryl Streep won the Best Actress Award. I love movies, I tell you, but reluctantly have to admit I haven't seen hardly any of the nominated pictures this year. I think I need to take about a week off and spend it at a theater complex somewhere. As usual, webmaster Tim Binall and I have a smattering of news oddities, stories that caught my eye during the past week or so. They're on the Coast website under Naps News. The first item posted there is a TV news report we did about a week ago on the Carnes case, just so it'll bring you up to date as we prepare to hear from Curtis Kull. It's a complicated story, so this report posted doesn't go into all the details about everything in the case, but you can find links to earlier video reports that were done about it if you're so inclined. Also, under Naps News, fans of the Loch Ness Monster might appreciate an ad that's being aired right now by a car company. You'll know it when you see it there. Those of you worried about something like Skynet taking over and nuking the human race will want to read an article about the robo-apocalypse, how likely such a scenario might be or not be, as the case may be. And also there under Naps News, a fascinating article chock full of speculation about whether Daniel Boone, the legendary frontiersman, whether he might have killed a Bigfoot back in the day. Boone claims to have killed something that sure sounds like a Sasquatch. This article looks at the root of that story. It's a fun read. That and more if and when you get some time to peruse the website. And while you're there, check out the Coast Insiders Club. It's about how you can sign up for what we used to call our StreamLink service. For about 25 cents a day, you get to listen to coast-to-coast shows at your convenience whenever you have the time. Also, you can tap into the archives of more than 1,000 earlier broadcasts, and there are other benefits available only to members. We have so many stations which carry the program across the world, more than 450 here in North America, I think, and every once in a while, a station will change formats or ownership, and then suddenly the station doesn't carry this show anymore. This is a way to make sure you stay in touch with us. Never miss one of our programs. Coast Insiders, check it out when you can. Time now for our first break. When we come back, we're joined by Undersheriff Curtis Kull to talk about the Patrick Carnes case and the possibility of a serial killer on Interstate 80. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us tonight. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of an unusual disappearance. An elderly man named Patrick Carnes was driving from Toledo, Ohio, to his home in Reno, Nevada, and in the middle of the Nevada high desert, just off of I-80, he vanished. The investigation of that incident has led law enforcement into some dark possibilities, including the chilling possibility that this disappearance could be the work of a serial killer or killers. This story has touched Coast listeners like nothing else I have covered, generating hundreds and hundreds of calls and emails, ideas that were forwarded to law enforcement. And it's not our usual fare here on the show, but it certainly has touched a nerve with all of you out there. As mentioned, I still get emails pretty much every day asking for updated information. Joining me now to talk about where the case stands is the point man for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, Undersheriff Curtis Kull. Curtis, thanks for taking time out to be with us.
Oh, you bet, George. Thank you so much for having us back on.
Describe for me the response you received from Coast listeners and others, how many tips you got, and what was done with all that information.
Well, we did your show in June of last year on a Friday, and for probably the next 2.5 weeks, that's how long it took to work through all the tips that that we got from the folks that that were listening that evening. So it was actually just for lack of a better word, just incredible the response that we got from everybody that was listening that evening.
And did you track it down? I mean, I know a lot of the tips came from truckers about ways to identify the truck that might have been traveling in tandem with Patrick Carnes.
Yeah, there were many, many tips in regards to, and again, the significant problem that we have with this case is trying to identify that logo on the back of the truck that that Pat said that he was following to the city of Elko, Nevada. We ran so many of those down. We ended up actually doing a standard letter that we mailed to a lot of these companies trying to elicit their assistance, made a list of all of the different ideas that that your listeners had of what particular companies these were, and then worked our way through those. Unfortunately, a lot of those were unsuccessful, but there were some other things that came out that that were definitely helpful.
I guess it hasn't caught the killers, if assuming there are killers involved. It hasn't identified the truck yet, but at least it allows you to cross some things off your list.
It absolutely does, and there were a lot of things that came to light that we weren't aware of. Myself and the other couple of investigators are helping me with this case. Things in regards to GPS systems and Qualcomm systems and what have you that that we were able to get on right away before we lost that window of opportunity.
You know, I talked to the Carnes family recently, and Jim Carnes had told me that their family has not yet sat around and come to the conclusion that their father's not coming back. They haven't allowed themselves to admit that. Give me your honest assessment. Is it possible that he's still alive out there? How likely that is? And also how likely it is that you can solve this thing?
Boy, that's tough.
Yeah, I don't want you to say something that is going to put you in hot water with the family, but I mean, it's fair to assume that the longer it goes on, the less likely it is that he comes back, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's very true. I mean, we're coming up, April will be a year, you know, at Pat's age. He was 86 years old. I mean, he was in very good health. That's why the family, you know, didn't hesitate to let him make this trip from Reno, Nevada, all the way over to Ohio. You know, unless the amazing type story, which sometimes you'll hear that that maybe he's sitting unidentified in a rest home or a hospital somewhere. Although, you know, I think that's kind of stretching it, because other authorities and other jurisdictions would do the same thing that we would do if we had somebody unidentified. They'd roll fingerprints or put teletypes out to law enforcement nationwide. I mean, Jim Carnes and I, we talk weekly. Jim's just a wonderful individual. The whole family are just wonderful people, and they might not on the surface. You know, it's just so tough, George. I mean, I can understand where you leave that light on and you tie that yellow ribbon and you hope for the miracle. I mean, and things do happen. I mean, Elizabeth Smart case. I mean, there are things in the law enforcement field that surprise all of us that have done this for many, many years. And so I wouldn't blame them at all. And I too, you know, hold out some sort of hope, but as the calendar starts to click by, it has to recede some.
The idea that Patrick Carnes might have just wandered off in the desert, he and his dog Lucky, I keep getting that from people who say, oh, this is something as simple as that. You've pretty much ruled that out, right? You've now gone back again and searched all the grounds around that area.
Yeah, we've hit that. Initially, we hit that back in April of last year. I mean, extensively. We have a very, very capable search and rescue team here at Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. They put six to seven hundred hours of searching, along with four different aerial flights. We went back about 6 months ago and did open and exposed mine shafts, where we dropped cameras down shafts in the area, looking to see if there's any evidence of any kind of disturbances. We went back out and covered the very immediate ground again, where Pat's vehicle was located. That scenario just really doesn't make any sense, because there were no mental issues, there were no depression, there was really no reason at all for Pat, who was a very a very capable and very cognizant, you know, adult to turn around and walk south into the desert rather than just waiting for the sun to come up, you know, just 6 hours later after his car got stuck.
I know you cast a pretty wide net. You were looking at a variety of disappearances in and around Interstate 80 to see if there might be a connection. Do you still entertain the possibility that this might be the work of serial killers?
You know, again, like we've discussed before, at that very same off-ramp, it begs your attention and makes you sit back and wonder. But in 2006, another woman, actually a woman from Reno, so another Reno resident, her car was found also abandoned at this particular off-ramp. And like we've discussed previously, this is really an off-ramp where there are absolutely no services, there's no lights, there's no restrooms, no rest stop. There's really nothing there. And Judith Casita's vehicle was found abandoned in pretty much so the same locale as Pat's car on the south side of Interstate 80 there. And she, too, has just literally vanished. I mean, no activity on any credit cards or anything whatsoever. And it does kind of cause you to sit back and kind of wonder, you know, Elko County down the line from us to the east towards Utah, they have an unidentified human remains that they found in December of 2010 right off the interstate. There's a lot of activity out there on that interstate. And it's a lot of transient activity, and there's a lot of cover of darkness, and there's a lot of cover of nothing out there.
Solvable case, though. I mean, it's still solvable in your view.
You know, George, and that's exactly why. And again, thank you, and on behalf of Jim and his family, thank you for continuing to keep this in the news. There is just something in the back of my head that tells me. There is one person out there that saw the one particular thing that we need, and we just haven't found that person yet. Maybe that person's listening tonight. I mean, there is so much traffic on that interstate. Somebody drove by and saw something that is the key to this entire case. I do believe it's solvable. I believe it's very solvable, and that's why we continue to work it literally every day since last April.
To your credit, you've had an open mind even about exotic possibilities like using psychics, remote viewers. And I know a lot of those folks, some of those folks at least, had offered to help. Anything come from that?
To be honest, no, not at this time. I mean, some of the information has been very chilling. There was a gentleman that called me from Sacramento. It was very disturbing. I mean, I had to hang up the phone and leave the office and go get a cup of coffee, especially when they tell you that, you know, he truly believed that that we would have yet another one. So, I mean, some of the information is very interesting. Some people that are not from our area whatsoever, and they are pinpointing specifically certain things that are out there, that again makes you sit back and go, boy, that's very interesting.
I know that we had talked about the FBI, which has a serial killer task force that looks specifically at truckers, and that there had been some communications between that organization and you. Have they helped?
Yeah, we've been in contact with the bureau out of the Las Vegas area, and in fact, as we speak right now, they're looking at preparing possibly a profile for us of possibly who might this type of individual be that might be responsible for the disappearance of Pat and then Ms. Casita as well.
Because there really are serial killers operating as truckers who travel around the country and just bump people off crimes of opportunity.
You know, like I said, George, it's just, when you're out there, and I think one of Pat's sons said it the best, Tom Carnes. It really is. It's the big lonely. So I mean, when you're out there in the middle of the night, that really is how the commerce flows through the United States, and that's along the interstate system. And if you stand out at this particular exit and watch that interstate, it is just a continual line of tractor-trailer rigs. So that is really your population out there. It's not like we're trying to hang this on the decent folks that
right.
drive truck, but that is the population that's out there at that particular time of day. So, you know, we're not even specifically saying that the person that passed that particular trucker in the video and the stills that you have on the site is...
Hey, Curtis, well, I'm sorry to cut you off, but that music is telling me we're going to the break. I really appreciate you coming back on, and I hope you'll keep us in the loop because my listeners sure want to know about this. Our listeners want to know about it, and we'll have you back anytime you want. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you, George.
Bruce Springsteen takes us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll be going up to open lines here in a little bit. You know, a little frontier justice might be what we need for whoever is doing these dastardly deeds up in and around Interstate 80. My thanks again to Undersheriff Curtis Cull for coming on to update us on the Pat Carnes case. That is a solvable case. There's information out there somewhere that will lead to a resolution, and that is certainly what the Carnes family needs is some way to resolve this whole thing. Still might have some sort of a happy ending, though. The more time that goes on, the less likely that might seem to be. But whoever is responsible for it needs to be brought to justice. And we have contact information for Curtis Cull. We don't want to waste his time, of course, but if you think you've got a good idea or a piece of information that has not been considered, sure hope you'll pass that along. And then as time permits, we'll have Curtis or the Carnes family come back and update us on the case from time to time because we want to keep this thing alive. At the top of the hour, Brian Holland to talk about the white supremacy movement. And when we come back, we go to the phones to see what's on your mind. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast. Let's go to the phones and find out what's on your mind this evening. John in Rochester, New York, east of the Rockies. John, how you doing?
How you doing? Actually, my name is Sean. I don't think I said it right.
Okay, Sean. Well, welcome to the program. What do you want to talk about?
Honored to be received. Back in 04, I'm talking about the NSA 80 issues. Back in 04, my son and I took a road trip out to Vegas to see his mother for a holiday. And on my way home, some weird things was going on. I noticed there were these cars kind of following me, passing me, and another one it would slow down and be behind me and pass in front of me. And I noticed their plates were covered with mud. And I seen about three or four other cars like that around me. I would pass a car, and I would see a car on the road. Stopped on the side, apparently abandoned, but then I would see the same car pass me up later on, about 30, 40 miles down the road. And basically, I decided to keep going. I didn't stop. I drove straight home without stopping out of fear and concern for my son's safety. These people were definitely following me.
So it started while you're on this road trip out to Las Vegas? Whereabouts? Where were you? What highway were you on?
I was 80, definitely 80, I believe.
80, okay.
I was going through Iowa, and I went through Iowa, Nebraska, and definitely Utah. And I noticed it more when I hit Utah coming back home. You know, it kind of started there on the way home. I mean, basically all the way as far as Ohio. It was really disturbing. They followed me almost halfway across the country.
Now, was this kind of could it be a coincidence that you were in the middle of some caravan of cars that were traveling that way anyway, or you think that there was some reason that they were focused on you?
What happened was I pulled over to get some fuel. I pulled over, it was in Indiana, and I noticed I seen this. They're like a series of cars. They're like a couple like excursion trucks, and there's a semi-truck. In fact, they got so bad in Iowa earlier that night, this one guy was driving the tractor trailer trying to run me off the road. And the guy left the truck, and about half an hour later, a car came back on the road and kept following me again. I said, it can't be the same guy. As if he switched cars and got back on the highway.
Did you call the police? You said somebody tried to run you off the road. Did you report it?
Oh, yeah, I called it. I called the Iowa police. I called Iowa State Police on 911 on my cell phone. And I told them what was going on. I said, I'm getting out of your state. I'm not going to be here. He said, don't speak. Said, man, I'm getting out of here. So I ignored his words. I got out of there. I just kept going. It was a crazy 36 hours. It's nothing.
What do you do for a living, John?
At the time, I was working. I was out of work. I was out of work for a while. was recovering from injuries I received in a robbery attempt, but that's another story. This definitely went down. It was just shady. Something wasn't right about it. When I went to the gas station, like I said, outside Indiana, I noticed a group of vehicles were parked together at this restaurant at the truck stop. And when they walked out, they seen me and ran back into the building. It was a group of people. And that, to me, that gave them away. They didn't expect to see me there getting gas.
Well, I'm certainly that was a spooky experience, but I guess I can't imagine if these are government types, what they would be following you around for, or why they would put that much attention to into.
Well, they weren't government types. They're definitely seedy-looking people, not government types. Like a ragtag bunch of people together. I don't know who they were, but they represented. But I noticed all their license plates were covered with mud front and back. You couldn't read their plate numbers.
So you're thinking maybe these are something like a ring of people just looking for victims on the highway.
That's the impression I got. They see New York plates that far west. You know, they attempted, you know, to snag me or whatever they wanted to do. You know, I just kept pushing. I didn't stop. They were surprised to see me to keep going like I was, I guess. Just kept moving. Fear.
John, I appreciate the call. Maybe if any of our other listeners have had experiences like that out on the highway, either I-80 or something else, call us up and let us know about it. John, thanks for the call. We're going west of the Rockies to, Sean. Now we're talking to John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Good morning, good evening, Mr. Knapp.
Good evening.
I'm actually on the road, too. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Good, sir. Would you like some current information on the Zodiac?
Sure. What do you got?
I have a number for you to call. Obviously, you have a pen there and you're recording this.
I do.
Number is 415-553-5700. That is the San Francisco office of the FBI. They have a suspect at large. They are seeking him. There's a point to all this, and the point is this. He's been under the nose all along. He's actually an inside job, that as far as I can go, as your choreographer said. The point is this, there has been a letter found dated 1990. Are you familiar with this letter from Eureka?
I'm not. Why don't you tell me about it?
I will tell you about it. If you go to Zodiac.com, and first of all, I'm very grateful that you're taking this call. It's been a very difficult process to process this information to people. The point is this, if you go to Zodiac.com, you must, well, you don't have to, but if you look carefully, you will find a letter. It is a Christmas card dated 1990. You know, it was dated 1990. It was sent either earlier or later. It must have been later. The point is this, if you look at the card, it is actually a snowman with a symbol of the funny nose with the glasses, with the hair on the eyes, that type of glasses that was used in the 1971 movie, the 1971 movie of the Zodiac. The point is this, yes, this is a channel message. This is from the divine. But the point is this, if you look at the keys, there's a photograph of the keys, Mr. Knapp. The keys are the answer to the whole case. You see, the keys are to the Eureka Federal Bank. They are security box keys. If you look at this letter, you will see the numbers on these. If somebody would open these things up, I understand about the processes. I understand. If somebody opens them up, they will find what they're looking for, finally.
So you think finally. That this is a clue that there's something like in a safety deposit box at the Eureka Bank?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you must go to Zodiac.com. Tom Boyd has been on this for almost 14 or 15 years.
Let's back up for a second. You said this is a channeled message? What part of this is channeled message?
This is a channeled message, yes.
What does that mean? It came into your head or somebody else's?
You know, it came into my head. I'm a channel. The point is this. He will be connected to other cases of national security. The problem is there will be a jurisdictional nightmare. The problem is Scotland Yard is looking at him, too, for the, well, I will say it like this, the Jack the Stripper cases going back to 56 to 59 to 64. Are you getting my message, sir? He is
yeah,
like
but let me back up for a second. Now, you said that the San Francisco FBI office has a specific suspect in mind, a guy who's at large that they're looking for. Do you want to tell us who it is?
I cannot, out of respect for your choreographer, I cannot say
my choreographer.
The name. I will give you this though. I will give you this. I will give it to you like this. There is a book, and if that book is published, and the book will come out October 31st, and that is all I will give you. If that book is published and he is caught, he will sensationalize the book and he will make a profit off the ill-gotten gains, correct?
Well, I don't know. I'm not.
But the point is this. The man will sensationalize the book. He will make lots of money.
Okay,
he'll
all right.
Money for his defense.
All right, John, we'll keep an eye on this. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Certainly the world is still interested in the Zodiac case. In fact, without saying too much, I'm working on an angle myself that has come my way in recent weeks, and it's pretty exciting stuff. Deals with the code to all those Zodiac letters that were sent out way back when. A fascinating mystery that continues. First-time caller Chief in Illinois. Hi, Chief.
Hello, George.
How's it going?
Fine, you?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a Potawatomi shaman, or also known as a pipe carrier. I'm a descendant of a chief, and I'm told I can't say the last name, but you could check online, it's there. I'm a descendant of the Potawatomis in here, but I've had a contact with Patrick Carnes since your June show. I've talked with Jim, and I've also talked with the Winnemucca County Sheriff Department about certain things. I don't want to go into the details that I've had the visions of, but the other people other than Pat involved that evening in the incident, I've had strong visions of, and I have several pages of notes of my visions that I'd like to relay on to Curtis.
Okay. Well, we have contact information on the website, or you can leave a number for Gina, and she can put you in direct contact. But can you give me a general idea? You have pages of information. Do you have information about a specific suspect, or do you have information about where Pat Carnes is?
Both. I don't want to complicate Curtis's job and go into all the details of the visions I've had, but contact with Pat Carnes. I know how to cross the dimensions into the various other realms and contact these people. So this is what I do. I do a lot of spiritual work like that, missing peoples. But your thought about the serial type of killers, trucker type of killers, that's right on the line. I don't want to go into all the details of it, but you know, let the people that did that incident that night to Patrick Carnes be aware that everything they've done, I've read, and everything where Patrick Carnes is located, I've read. So I will be putting together the package, and I will be relaying that on.
Okay. Well, we have the contact information on our website, also on our KLAS-TV website, and you can also leave a note with Gina there. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, I can just say this, Chief, is that that Undersheriff Curtis Cull is open to all possibilities. At this point, he's looking for help from wherever he can get it. If you've got some kind of information gleaned from psychic methods, he'll listen to it and check it out. And if it works out, we'll be certainly glad to report it to our listeners. Thanks for calling. Joanne in Twin Falls, Idaho, on the wildcard line. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Something happened about 20 years ago I lived in Elko, and me and my daughter, she was about 5, were driving through to Twin Falls, and we stopped at the Flying J truck stop in Wells, Nevada.
Yes.
And we went in, used the bathroom, and I always made her stay in there with me, but when I was washing my hands, she snuck out, and then she came right back in, and she looked scared. And I said, "What happened?" And she said, "There's a guy out there, and he crooked his finger at me, like, 'Come here.'" And it just scared me to death. And we went out there, and I said, "Show me who he was." And we looked around, and she showed me this guy. And I didn't do anything because I was terrified for her. I regret not doing something. But he was about 5'5", a dark complected white guy, kind of a little stocky and kind of a fleshy face. And I wish now I would have told the cash register lady or called the police or something. But
what was the date on this again, Joanne?
It was about 19 years ago.
And you think it's related somehow to this, or it's just a weird feeling you had, or?
Well, it's always bugged me that I didn't do something, but I'm thinking, you know, has he done that before? Has he gotten someone, a child, you know? That's just the closest we've come to, you know, something like that. And I'm pretty sure he was a truck driver. He looked like a truck driver because we see lots of them. And I would say maybe 36,
37. Here's what I'm trying to figure out, Joanne, is why you think that the relatively benign thing that happened there, scary that as it was, is related to a murder or a serial killer. I mean, it's a jump, and I'm just trying to understand why you think that they could be related.
Well, I'm thinking if she had gone to him, what would have happened then? You know?
Right. Okay. Well, I appreciate the information, and we'll make sure that Curtis Cole gets a hold of that description might come in handy. Appreciate the call. Try to get one more quick one in. Terry in Reno. Hi, Terry.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
Hey, I was talking to my husband the other day, and this is about 5 years ago, but we were coming back from Vegas to Reno, and had a truck, a semi following us, like on our bumper. If we sped up, he sped up. If we slowed down, I mean, it was late at night, couldn't get him to, you know, get around us at all, or get away from him. And we've been trying to see if we could remember even, you know, like what kind of truck it was. When we finally got to where we could get off, it was quite a few hours he followed us because there's, you know, just a lot of nothing out there. He pulled into the gas station behind us, which was really odd because it wasn't a truck stop where, you know, like a semi would stop for gas. He didn't even pull up by the pump. He just pulled out, you know, and sat there and watched us. And my husband got out and stood by the car. Finally, he got back in his truck and he drove away. But it just was, you know, where the hair on your neck gets chills. And, you know, there's just so many odd things that happen on the back roads of Nevada.
Well, that's for sure. Now, you didn't get any kind of information at all that would be useful for law enforcement to identify who this guy was. No insignia, no license plate.
I'm trying to remember if we, I could have sworn we wrote down the number. You know, it's been quite a few years ago, but, you know, I'm looking through stuff like maps where, you know, we might have, you know, scratched it on the side or something because we were going to call the highway patrol because he definitely was menacing, like he wanted us to, you know, pull over, and then he would stop, and it was very, very scary. And so, you know, we're still trying to think if we can remember, you know, anything about that might help them, anything, you know, with recognition, with marks on the truck or anything.
Yeah, I would say that if you did write down anything at all, that you go through your maps in the car and see if any of those scribblings are still around, because that sounds like a piece of information that Curtis Cole would like to hear about. Thanks, Terry. Thanks to all of our callers. And folks, if you have any ideas about the Pat Carnes case, we'd like to keep this investigation alive and help out the law enforcement professionals who are trying to resolve this mystery once and for all. So please send along your tips and ideas and suggestions. Coming up, Brian Holland with a look into the murky world of white supremacists here on Coast to Coast AM.